First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
In a dramatic late-night vote, the Duval County School Board has essentially defied the governor. Public schools in this county will mandate masks for students next week with a workaround. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with Duval Schools Superintendent Dr. Diana Green and Board Chair Elizabeth Anderson about the vote to require masks for kids. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a Pontevedra man has a message for the unvaccinated after he spent a week in the ICU with COVID-19. First, though, this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The Florida Hospital Association is putting out updates because the state is no longer doing them every day. There are 11,515 hospitalizations around the state from COVID-19 right now. Bed utilization is at 84%, ICU bed utilization at 86%. And of course, as most of you out there who've been following all this know, Greater Jacksonville is the epicenter right now of transmission of the Delta variant of coronavirus. So in the context of these numbers, last night's Duval County School Board meeting was especially intense. Parents were rallying outside, and then inside, the members heard impassioned public comment. Most of those present were asking the board to defy Governor Ron DeSantis and require students to wear masks when school begins next week. There's already a mandate in place for teachers and staff. Here is one parent speaking at last night's meeting.
Attending in school. Dante, if he contracted COVID, could end up on a ventilator or worse. He's already spent over 200 days on a ventilator in his life, over a year in the hospital, and I'm not willing to risk that. I know that there are many other children in his situation that are in the school right now, and I feel at a minimum, educators and staff caring for this vulnerable population should have protection similar to healthcare workers.
After hours of discussion, the board in the end voted 5-2 to require masks for students for 30 days. Now, there will be an opt-out for parents who do not want to comply with that. Duval County joined Alachua County to our west, Gainesville, in requiring a mask mandate for students. Keep in mind, Governor DeSantis has actually threatened to defund school districts that do not obey his order banning masks for students. In a moment, we'll speak with Duval School Board Chair Elizabeth Anderson about this. But first, we're very excited after a long night to welcome Duval Superintendent Dr. Diana Green to the show. She's on the line. Dr. Green, good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Well, Dr. Green, tell us about what this Code of Conduct Amendment, essentially, is what it is, that the board passed last night, and what it means for Duval County students.
This amendment, which it is effective for 90 days.
Thank you for correcting me. Yeah.
Yes, it's 90 days before we would have to bring it back before the board and publish it for 28 days, the normal process for an item that qualifies for a public hearing. This indicates that the expectation is that students are going to wear a mask. However, if a parent or guardian wants to make a decision for their child that they want them exempt from that, they would need to complete an opt-out procedure that we will hopefully have solidified by the end of today.
So in effect, what you're doing is you're putting the onus on parents who disagree with the mask mandate. They will have to go through an additional layer of paperwork if they want to opt out. Did you do this because you thought this might be more likely to survive any challenge from the state?
Well, I would defer that question to Chair Anderson, because this was my portion of the, I amended a portion of it, and then the board amended a portion. And so together we created this new amendment. But the step of opt-out really is about making sure that families understand the facts about wearing a mask, what the school district is putting in place, when students have to wear a mask, and then they can make an informed decision. And it when we say paperwork, it really actually will be done online through our parent portal.
Mm-hmm.
So our parents have access to that. And just as a FYI, parents, if you're not registered for the parent portal, please do so as soon as possible. You just need to contact your school to follow those steps.
Are you concerned at all that the governor will retaliate against the Duval County Public Schools? He had actually threatened to withdraw funding from districts that defied him on this.
Well, one, again, this is for 90 days. Two, when you read the executive order, we are giving families an opportunity to make a decision for their child. So based on what we have in our code of conduct, which was approved last night, I do not believe that we are violating or defying. We have just made it very clear that we expect students to wear facial coverings or masks. And if they are not going to wear a facial covering or mask, a parent or guardian has to opt them out of that.
On Twitter this week, a spokesperson for the governor, Christina Pushaw, said that if districts don't obey the governor's order and require masks, that it's all unenforceable. How will the district enforce this? You've had some practice at it. So will it be the same procedure as last year?
Well, it will not be the same procedure as last year, because last year there were actual discipline consequences. And, you know, I really want to highlight that we did not have to implement any of those discipline procedures. Our students showed up. They were masked, they were wearing facial coverings, and for the most part, it wasn't a problem last year. We believe that our families will either make a decision about whether they want their students wearing a facial covering, and if they do not want their child to wear a facial covering, we have the utmost confidence that they're going to complete the paperwork that is needed.
As we continue with Dr. Diana Green, superintendent of the Duval County Public Schools, we also are pleased now to welcome Elizabeth Anderson, a chair, I believe you're still the chair, of the Duval County School Board. Elizabeth Anderson, good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
So tell us more about this dramatic vote last night. 5-2 in favor of mask mandates for kids in Duval County Public Schools. How much did the activism from parents and teachers and also doctors affect the final vote?
Well, you know, we are not public health experts on the school board. You know, our business is in education. So certainly hearing from our medical professionals is impactful. And then hearing from our constituency, from our parents and the families that we serve is always important to the school board, and taking that perspective into consideration and having them be engaged is always important to us.
And so you followed right behind Alachua County in requiring masks. People are now wondering if other school districts around the state might follow the lead of Duval and Alachua, if you've perhaps given them cover to defy the governor on this. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, we were in our meeting late last night, so as we were having this conversation, you know, we weren't aware of what was happening in Alachua County. I think what we were focused on is trying to make sure that we were doing the best thing we could for our community here in Duval County. We know that the community spread in Duval is reaching peak levels, and it's important to us to be able to create the safest environment possible for as many students as possible, while being able to maintain the opportunity for parents to exercise a choice and respecting those parental rights. I don't think that what we've done is a defiance of the executive order. I think we're getting as close as we can to being able to exercise what we need to do for our local community.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, this also had a special intensity for parents of children under 12, Elizabeth, who are not yet eligible to be vaccinated. In the end, was it those parents and their fear and concern that might have carried the day in terms of informing your vote?
I think that's definitely a consideration. You know, I think we're hearing from state and local leaders, as well as the district. Vaccinations are important. They are a critical piece. Our medical professionals are telling us this is a critical piece to being able to get our communities healthy and well and being able to sustain this over the long haul. But we do know that children under 12 years of age are not eligible for a vaccine right now. And it is critically important that we keep those children healthy, but also that we don't create more opportunity for spread as those children come in and out of our buildings and back into their neighborhoods.
And Dr. Diana Green, at the same time as you will be requiring masks now for students, you are also working with the county's health department to set up a vaccination clinic this month in each of the county's secondary schools, offering the Pfizer shot to eligible high school and middle school students and staff, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So that is another way, then, that you are working to promote a safe environment in the Duval County Public Schools. That's certainly your top priority right now. And what else can you share with us about what you'll be doing to keep the learning environment safe? For example, some parents have said, why not install HEPA filters and other types of things like that in the classroom? Can you share with us what some of the other protocols might be this year?
Well, I would really refer to my chief of facilities to talk about the HVAC systems, which we have ensured that we are following all standards as it relates to filtration and changing air filters for our HVAC systems. I do want to remind everyone that Duval County has some of the oldest schools in the state of Florida, and the fact that we can ensure that the filtrate systems in these really old facilities are up to speed and up to par and ready to start school is just a testament to our maintenance department. But in addition to that, we will implement many of the same strategies we did last year, such as the daily wipe downs of high touch points, hand sanitizer, Clorox wipes in all classrooms, students going through a regimen of frequently washing their hands, especially at our elementary schools. One of the things at the end of the summer that we thought we would be able to not utilize this year was temperature checks. And we decided to bring back temperature checks at the elementary school. Secondary, they have clinics now in all of our schools. So the secondary students, if needed, they can get temperature checks through the clinic. Something else new, we added telehealth this year. So our students at every single school with parent permission will have virtual medical services from MD doctors if it is for health, physical health, as well as mental health support. And again, this is all with parent permission. And for the first time, every school will have either an RN, LPN, or a medical aide manning the clinic as well as the isolation rooms in our schools. So many of the things that we did last year, we are implementing this year.
Thank you for that update. And thanks for your time after a long night last night. Superintendent Dr. Diana Green of the Duval County Public Schools, I know you've got to jump off. We'll continue with Board Chair Elizabeth Anderson, but thanks, Dr. Green.
Thank you.
And let's go to some of your calls now about last night's dramatic vote in the Duval County School Board offices to require masks for students. There will be an opt-out for parents who do not want to mask their kids. 549-2937, Peter on the South Side. Hi, Peter. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good morning. I'd like to congratulate the school board on their decision. Often, school board membership is a stepping stone to other political offices, and they seem to have stepped up and decided to do their job. Unlike the governor, who has decided not to govern Florida, but rather to run for president of the United States by polishing his Trump credentials. So I think it's a good move. I'm not sure about the opt-out clause. I don't know the details. But anyway, good job, school board.
Thank you, Peter. Elizabeth Anderson, you've been hearing a lot from parents, I expect. And tell us more about that.
Sure. You know, I think it's been an overwhelming response. We've gotten hundreds of emails. You know, we've got dozens of people coming to our board meetings, protests. Our community has been, to me, pretty clear that they wanted to see our board respond to the needs of our community. You know, I really believe that school boards are one of the sort of last local bastions of local control and home rule. And so I think that we are well positioned to listen to our community members and act in the best interest of those people.
Right. I mean, certainly this has been fascinating to watch because, as you say, home rule has long been a value of governance, and particularly among the Republican Party, we should point out, letting localities determine what's best for their population. That, I think, is why the governor's blanket order on masking has become controversial, because it does fly in the face of home rule. Let's go to Helen on Amelia Island. Hi, Helen. Good morning.
Good morning. As a former New York City school superintendent, I just want to congratulate this board and the superintendent for the choice they made last night.
Oh, wow. When were you superintendent in New York?
Way back, back in 2003, before mayoral control.
Okay.
And then I worked, luckily, at the College Board as a vice president for College Board schools. So I am familiar with the choices this board had to make, and I congratulate them. It is not easy in these times, but we do not live in an authoritarian state nor country. And I think we wear seatbelts every day. What is a mask? That said, that's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Helen. Elizabeth, do you agree with that caller that the moves by the governor on this and other issues, critics say, are authoritarian?
You know, I think that the superintendent said it best yesterday. While I may not agree with the approach that has been taken, our fight at this moment is not with the governor. It's really with COVID-19 and making sure that when our students come back in a week, less than a week at this point, that we are welcoming them to a safe and healthy environment as much as we possibly can. And we know that that is very challenging given the amount of community spread, given the low rates of vaccination in Duval County. So I think that, you know, it is important for us to be able to do what is good for our area. I was with a group of school board members across the state yesterday, a small group, and, you know, they were surprised. Oh, yeah, you guys in Duval, you have it bad. You know, we're not going through the same things. And so in our area at this time, we need to be cautious. We need to be masking and we need to be getting vaccinated.
Rusty's on the west side. Hi, Rusty. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning, you all.
Good morning.
Your high school elite programs, you've got Cambridge ACE, IB, and then there's Advanced Placement. These days, AP creates the achievable standard. If a kid can survive AP, get to the AP exam, make a 3, maybe a 4, then the SAT or the ACT will be a piece of cake by comparison. So even if the kid goes on to make pizzas, drive a truck, work construction, no matter, the high school has more than done its job. Can you broaden access to AP and make it more user-friendly?
Not really a mask question, not really a health question, but let's get his question answered. Elizabeth.
Sure. So I do think that Duval County right now has some of the most accessibility to a wide variety of students for our college prep programs, AP, IB, ACE. We also have a lot of dual enrollment, which is another great opportunity for students to be able to get college ready and really earn college credits while they're still in high school, which saves a lot of families money and gets students on their way to being ready for a career. So I do think if there's opportunity to kind of look at those stats in Duval County, I hope that you'll be surprised. I know I always am at the opportunities we're able to afford families and children that attend our public schools.
CJ in Mandarin. Hey, CJ, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your coverage on this important issue.
Sure.
So, yes, I'd like to congratulate and thank the board and the superintendent for doing the right thing in the face of a looming threat. And I just would like to add the comment that Governor DeSantis is a disgrace and should be removed from office. We do have an election coming up next year. Hope everyone gets involved. And my question is, given this looming threat, and also given the fact that you have provided accommodations to conform to the order as far as allowing parents to opt out, if Governor DeSantis is listening to this right now and he's considering pulling funding, do you have any message to him?
Thanks, CJ. I highly doubt the governor's listening to this program. But Elizabeth Anderson, what about that? The governor threatening to pull funding from school districts that defy his order and require masks for students. The governor said he wants kids to breathe free, to have fun, to not be worried about this. He said he doesn't accept the science around mask wearing in schools. He doesn't think it would make a dramatic difference. So what about this threat to pull funding?
Sure. So I have to say, I'm not exactly excited to be here either, but this is where we are. I certainly wanted to welcome children back to a more normal school year and get back to the business of educating and being kids. Our kids really need that. I have a child myself, and I know that, socially and emotionally and educationally, I would love to be back to normal, but that's not the state that we are in right now. Regarding funding, and my message to the Department of Education and the Department of Health as they work to create rules at the executive order of our governor is to be really thoughtful about this funding, because as we discussed last night, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that Duval County would lose if such an extensive funding loss were to be applied. It's not something that a district, I don't know that any district could really sustain and continue to keep our doors open for children. So it's just not an option for us to be able to lose our state funding. And I don't know that it's a fair approach for our districts, given these circumstances.
It will be very interesting to see if other districts follow your lead. Both Duval and Alachua County, Gainesville, now requiring masks for students in defiance of the governor's order. There will be an opt-out for parents, of Duval County school students who do not want to mask their children. Elizabeth Anderson, Duval County School Board, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Of course. Thank you so much, Melissa.
And we were also joined by Superintendent Dr. Diana Green. And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, some good news for your midweek, but up next.
I had problems in the middle of the night with trying to breathe and fever, and pretty much all the symptoms spiked except for I never lost taste or smell.
A healthy young Ponte Vedra dad has a story to tell. His harrowing journey with COVID and why he's now urging everyone to get the vaccine. That's next. Well, a Ponte Vedra man has a story to share. 46-year-old Kevin Carroll and his family, they decided they weren't going to get vaccinated. Kevin's healthy, has a beautiful family, everything was going great, and he figured he didn't need the shot. But Kevin came to regret that decision after he spent a harrowing week in the ICU after contracting COVID-19. Now, Kevin Carroll and his family have a message. Get the vaccine. I spoke with him. Take a listen. Kevin, so good to talk to you and so glad you're doing better. And thanks for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So I guess let's go back to the beginning of your journey with COVID-19. Can you tell us how it all started for you, your first symptoms and how they progressed?
Sure. So, you know, it happened in the middle of July for me, around the July 15th timeframe, where I just kind of woke up, you know, feeling average and really don't ever get sick. And just thought, hey, I need to take it easy a little bit. And then as that day kind of went on, I just decided, like, you know, there was something in the air. And so just needed to relax a little bit. And literally within 24 hours, the next day, I had problems in the middle of the night with trying to breathe and fever, and pretty much all the symptoms spiked except for the, I never lost taste or smell, but it came on really pretty fast for me.
And let's clarify to folks, you had decided not to get the vaccine just because you didn't think, as a young, healthy guy, that you were at great risk, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been healthy for a year and a half. It was no political reason, or it was just the vaccine could be used for somebody else. And we're a young, healthy family and, you know, living in our own little bubble.
Sure. Okay. So mid-July, you get sick and you realize that you probably had COVID. Then what happened?
So I went into the ER and the Beaches. And when I went in there, they tested me and I was tested positive, and they started me on some initial medication. And those folks there are incredible. And we ended up going home that night, and literally about 24 hours later, it got worse. So I went back to the ER, and at that point, the wait lines had already increased dramatically. I had been in the waiting room for about 5 hours before being able to get seen, because the increase of volume was just incredible, even 24 hours later. But it was at that point when they sent me home again, and I realized even about 12 hours later, it was just going downhill from there. And that's when I checked myself into the Mayo Clinic.
Wow. That might have saved your life. So you go to Mayo, and then what?
So I went to Mayo, and as soon as I got into the Mayo Clinic, I was back into the exam room within 6 minutes, and within an hour, they had me in ICU. And talk about a team there. They're just the people that come in on the day-to-day, and they're just the warriors up there are incredible.
What was it like in the ICU?
So it's you know, once you get into your room where I was for a week, it's pretty lonely. You know, for people to come in and out, they put their full PPE gear on, and you know, they don't come in and out unless they have to, and they do a lot of monitoring from outside. But it's one of those things that you realize looking around. I was expecting there to be a lot of older people, and you know, it was a younger group than I was expecting.
Yeah, and let's remind people again of your age. You are,
I'm 46.
46 years old, healthy. Yeah. Father, and husband. Okay, so you're in the ICU. How sick are you at this point? What's it feel like?
So for me, it was always kind of a breathing concern more than anything. Being able to mentally, I wanted to make sure I did everything I could to not be put on to a breathing treatment machine. But they did have me on a not a vent, but a high flow breathing machine, which honestly was, you know, the day one they put me on two of them and they were overlapping and it was a little overwhelming. But then continue to watch and be able to wean off of them over that time frame. Just it obviously got my spirits up and continue to help me progress.
How scary is it, Kevin, to not be able to draw a good breath when you're really sick with this illness?
You know, it's tough. It's one of those things that you think that, hey, I can do anything as long as I can breathe, right? I've never had that situation. I've never had asthma. I've never had any issues like that. So to be able to go for a breath and not have it there, that's when the time becomes a little scary.
Sure. So in addition to the oxygen, did Mayo Clinic give you any other kinds of treatments?
Yes. So, I say I got world-class treatment. I was able to get the plasma, which was awesome, and there were some other antibiotics that they were able to provide me that I qualified for. And I think because they were able to do it so fast that I was able to get out as fast as I was able to.
Do you feel like making the decision to quickly go and get the treatment that you got made the difference for you? Do you think you could have died if you had not?
You know, I don't know if I could have died. But I will say that the stress that you feel when you can't breathe, you know, emotionally get you thinking, you know, different thoughts. But I will say that if I didn't go as fast as I went, I think I would have a harder recovery than I'm having right now.
And how is that going? You're out of the hospital. You're recovering. How are you feeling now? And, you know, are you getting any other kinds of treatment at home?
So I'm feeling great. I'm doing all the practicing with all the air treatments that they're asking me to do, and I'm off oxygen, which is great. I'm monitoring that, and I, with the Mayo system, they monitor my vitals from home twice a day. So again, it's almost like the world-class treatment is continued here at home.
That's great. Now your wife, go ahead.
About a month. I was going to say, and we'll probably do that for about a month.
Your wife's been posting about this. You're 7 days in the Mayo ICU. You've lost weight, dozens of blood draws, countless doses of medicine and oxygen treatments, two convalescent plasma treatments, dozens of frontline healthcare workers racing around the clock to help you and others, the sleepless nights, the feelings of terror and despair, the prayers. So you and your wife, you've decided to share your story to encourage more people to get vaccinated because you decided you didn't need the vaccine. And I'm assuming now you probably wish you had gotten it. So what's your message to people out there who haven't been vaccinated and for whatever reason they're hesitant to get the COVID vaccine as we're sitting here in this national hotspot for transmission of the disease? What's your message to them?
So as soon as I can get the vaccine, I absolutely will. For me, it was just laziness. It was something that we thought we were healthy and it didn't affect us. And we went a year and a half and there was no other reason behind it. So I would tell you our 12-year-old son is vaccinated now and it's one of those things that we believe strongly that anybody who has the opportunity and is healthy to get it and should get it should absolutely go out and get it today.
Yeah. I mean, particularly, I think hearing a personal story like yours is so powerful because people can look at the data and the studies on this and the science, but they seem to be really moved by personal stories. Have you found that to be the case when you're talking to friends and neighbors about what you've gone through?
We have. In fact, we've had more friends post to us the same thing that say, you know, we didn't even think about it or we weren't going to get it, but because of your story, we went out to get it. And then that's one of the reasons why Karen and I really sat down and talked about posting some information about this because, you know, we feel like we're the normal day people and it was just kind of out of sight, out of mind for us. And if we could help one or two people out there that were on the fence, that was important to us.
Sure. And I hope it's helped some people listening to this right now. So, you know, Kevin, it's so great to talk to you. And I'm so glad you're doing well for you and your family. And I'm so grateful that you decided to share your story with people so that we can get more people out there vaccinated. Kevin Carroll, thanks and keep in touch.
Thank you so much.
Well, many of you out there have been telling us how tough it's been to find a COVID test in a timely manner. There have been long lines outside the downtown health department and other people waiting and waiting for their test appointment at a drugstore. Avicenna Medical is trying to make this easier. Dr. Samal Soleimani is CEO, president of Avicenna Medical, and he is on the line to tell us how you can get a timely and reliable COVID test. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. So Avicenna Medical is expanding testing sites around town. Tell us what's happening.
So we have been at the forefront of COVID since beginning of the pandemic last year. Obviously, we are a full-fledged urgent care center that have been in Jacksonville, physician-owned since 2005. So we are not a medical practice that's just here because of COVID, mm-hmm. and we are expanding through Jacksonville. But we were the only facility in Jacksonville as early as April of last year who invested in our analyzers and machines and testing equipment to be able to test across city of Jacksonville. And last year, during the peak of COVID, Avicenna Medical was testing, between 700 to 1,000 patients a day across city of Jacksonville. And all of this was with same day results, usually results available in 2 to 3 hours. Now, this is while Lot J was going on downtown and patients were waiting 7 to 10 days to get the results while waiting 6 to 8 hours in their cars. So we just want a very efficient service. We currently have 4 offices in Jacksonville, and they're listed on avicenna.com. Due to the demand, now for the purpose of testing, because our offices are booked 2 to 3 days out for COVID testing, simply because only so many tests can be processed out of a single office. And so we recently also opened a drive-through site on Southside Boulevard in the Golden Corral parking lot. And that is also something that can be reserved and booked online through our website. The one thing that patients should know, which a lot of patients unfortunately do not know, is that if you are insured, if you have almost any insurance, there is a national mandated program called the cost share waiving program, which is federally mandated, that if you are insured, regardless of your deductible or whether you have a copay or you have not made your deductible, that as long as you're seen by a provider, so whether a nurse practitioner, physician assistant, or a physician, and you either have an exposure to COVID or anything related to COVID-related symptoms, testing, and treatment, it is covered at 100%. Mm-hmm. So patients that typically would have, in these days, most people have a several thousand dollar deductible that they never meet, and they would have to usually come out of pocket for their medical visits. For the purpose of COVID testing and treatment, those are picked up at 100%. Now, once again, this is only if you're insured and you're seen through one of the offices. If you're not insured, it does not apply, because then obviously there's nothing for insurance carriers to pick up. Those mm-hmm. become costs that patients would have to cover themselves.
There is such demand for this, as you've been sharing. You're now providing rapid tests for hundreds of patients a day across town, between your locations and then this new drive-through site on Southside Boulevard. Who should get tested, doctor?
Right now across Jacksonville, data shows that more than 80% of anyone that tests positive for COVID has a Delta variant. So 4 out of 5 positive COVID tests are Delta variant. And the significant difference between what we see this year versus last year is that last year, almost half the patients that we saw that were COVID positive were asymptomatic. So you had the typical patients that came in just because they were told they were exposed, or they were just having an operation, a knee surgery, and need to get a COVID test for their, pre-operation procedure, and they would test positive. So we would see quite a bit of asymptomatic patients. This year, we don't see that. I really do not see any asymptomatic positive patients. Like, if patients are positive, they're quite sick or they're very symptomatic. And so the prevalence is so high. Last year, at the peak of COVID, we consistently kind of matched what was going on across the country, which was we were positive about 10% of the patients we tested. So if we tested 500 patients, 50 would be positive, give or take, you know, a couple here and there. But now if we test 500, 110 are positive. So our positivity rate continues to be north of 20%, which is double what it was last year. I mean, there's certain days and certain batches that the positivity rate is 30%, 40%. So this day and age, I mean, this prevalence of Delta variant, when patients come in, and we see this, and my providers see this every day, where patients come in, and they're like, no, this is my allergies. I have this every year. I have allergies. There's no way this is COVID. And then we're like, no. And now CDC requires and recommends really that if you have any respiratory symptoms of any kind due to the high prevalence of COVID, that you should be screened for it, simply because it would almost be a liability if a patient came into any medical facility that had cough, congestion, drainage, and then they were not tested, they left and ended up with a bad outcome, or they gave it to somebody else at a bad outcome, and they would circle back to say, okay, how were you seen at a medical facility in the middle of a pandemic with respiratory symptoms and you were not screened for COVID? Mm. So patients that come in with any of these respiratory symptoms, you know, we simply tell them, because the prevalence is so high, we really can't just chalk this up to being allergies or just a plain sinus infection. We have to screen to make sure that this is not COVID.
And doctor, in the short amount of time we have left with you, can you tell us, you're joining several mayors later today to discuss this expanded testing protocol?
At 12:05, it's a live press conference with the mayor and the rest of the mayors of the beach to discuss this pandemic and how it's affecting the city, and you know what we can all do collectively to try to, you know, get tested, protect ourselves, protect our loved ones. This is not going away. When schools open back up in 2 weeks, mind you, you know, temperatures are high. You know, viruses don't spread to the frequency when, you know, it's 90 degrees versus when it becomes 60 or 50 degrees. So my fear is that this is not something that is going to go away in 2 weeks or a month. We're going to be in it for a long haul, at least through, you know, December, January, February, just like how it was last year.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think you're absolutely right. We will be covering that news conference with the mayor, yourself, and other leaders. And as you said, go to avicenna.com to get a COVID test scheduled. They are ramping this up dramatically to accommodate the huge demand. Thank you, doctor. He's Dr. Samal Soleimani, CEO, president of Avicenna Medical. Again, avicenna.com to get your COVID test. Thanks, doctor.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
A quick break, and in a moment, we will lighten things up just a bit with some good news for your midweek in our What's Good Wednesdays. Don't go away.
St. Johns County Cultural Events Division presents Sing Out Loud Festival in St. Augustine, September 10th through 26th. Over 100 performances, including TLC, Parquet Courts, Yola, Patty Griffin, and May Day Parade. Info at singoutloudfestival.com.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community, featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com.
An immigrant's survival often teeters on the edge of hard work and exploitation. Anna Q moved from China to the U.S. to join her mother, and she joins us to tell her story of her estrangement from her mother after she turned her in to the Office of Children and Family Services for being overworked. Her new book is called Made in China, a memoir of love and labor. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
on the next Fresh Air, Understanding Osama Bin Laden. As the 20th anniversary of 9/11 approaches, we speak with Peter Bergen, one of the world's foremost authorities on Al-Qaeda. He has a new biography of Bin Laden. Bergen says he wanted to understand why Bin Laden created an organization dedicated to mass murder. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
It's taken 18 years.
Now that conflict has come, the only way to limit its duration is to apply decisive force.
But the U.S. combat mission in Iraq is ending. We look at America's new role there and how it differs from Biden's plan for Afghanistan. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville artist Tiffany Manning is on her way to the Art Prize Festival in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She'll be showcasing her well-regarded Feminine Soul project. I spoke with her.
It initially launched here in Jacksonville in May, and after that, we applied to Art Prize in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is an international art competition, and we were accepted. So we are heading on the road, and I'm going to recreate the Feminine Soul Project with the women of Grand Rapids, 100 new women.
Wow. And this is a way to honor a community's outstanding women. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's not specific to outstanding women. It's really kind of every woman mm-hmm. in the community is available to become part of the project. Whether she decides yes or no is up to her.
And how do you do that? This is through an audio visual immersive experience. So this is how you express your art. Tell us how this will be brought to life.
Sure. I am going up to Grand Rapids to immerse myself in the community and find 100 women who are agreeable to be in the project. And what that looks like is I will take a portrait of her, and she is asked to use only her eyes to send me a nonverbal message. And then I record her voice sharing something she wouldn't normally share with a stranger.
How'd you come up with this idea?
I first came up with the concept while riding a subway in Washington, D.C. in 2002. Just sitting there, you know, daydreaming about nothing and everything, and happened to be inspired by a woman with pink hair who was sitting across from me, and I really wanted to know her story and share it, and the project was born from there.
And so if people look at your website, they can see how this all came together in Florida, FeminineSoulProject.com, and it made a splash here. So I guess that's what attracted the attention of the Art Prize event, yes?
Yes. It definitely created an amazing connection between the participants who said yes and the viewers who came to give their time and listen to these incredibly intimate stories that the women shared.
So you're getting on the road up to Michigan. That'll be nice in the summer. A little bit cooler weather. I'm a little jealous, I have to say. How much are you looking forward to this?
I am very excited about it. And, you know, it won't stop in Grand Rapids. That's just the next step. I am looking to take it to cities all over the country and, you know, eventually branch out into the international market.
Good luck, Tiffany Manning. Okay, a few other news and notes for your Wednesday. Mark your calendar for the Mandarin Garden Club and their famous $1 clothing and jewelry sale this Friday and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1. Gently used clothing for men, women, and kids, and everything's a dollar. They'll also have a pop-up plant sale. So get over to 2892 Loretta Road, 9 o'clock Friday and 9 a.m. Saturday. Check it out at mandaringardenclub.org, too. ViStar Credit Union says three leaders in its organization were featured in a segment of the Military Makeover Operation Career Lifetime Show hosted by Montel Williams. Team members Brittany Bennett, Allie Braswell Jr., and Bob Sanders shared how their military service provided the leadership, teamwork, and problem-solving skills necessary to transition to civilian careers. Pretty cool to see that. And Beaches Energy Service, the City of Jacks Beach and the Beaches Sea Turtle Patrol have concluded their annual public awareness campaign to protect sea turtles during nesting season on local beaches. The mantra is clean, dark, flat. You can buy a mug, a coffee mug, that says that. I actually have one. It's right here in studio with me. These specially designed mugs were sold around town, and they sold out in less than 6 weeks. Now, this clean, dark, flat hashtag is an easy way to remember what we can all do to help this threatened species. For sea turtles to successfully build their nests, hatch, and return to the ocean, the nesting ground, which is their beach, needs to be clean, free of litter and trash and chairs and things, dark, free of artificial light, and flat, free of holes or sandcastles that trap the turtles. As I said, they gave me one of these mugs a few years ago, and it's really become my favorite. You can check it out and more about the Clean Dark Flat campaign and efforts to protect sea turtles at beachesenergy.com/cleandarkflat. Congrats to everyone out there at the beaches who worked so hard on that campaign. And if you have something you'd like us to add to our weekly menu of good news on Wednesdays, send us a quick email at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And thanks for listening. And thanks also to our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Gortzfeld. This podcast will be up later today on all platforms. Take a listen. You can always listen, too, through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And as we say every day, mask up again, folks, and get vaccinated.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.
North Florida TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services, clean fuels,